Good evening and welcome to The Librarian on Autism on the Air, the special holiday show. Tonight, I have a very special guest, Emily March, and I'm super excited to share all of this with you. But let me tell you before we get started that this is a copyrighted and trademark podcast owned solely by the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, LLC, on the web at authorsontheair.com. So let me introduce you to Emily March. She is the New York Times and Publishers Weekly and USA Today bestselling author of over 30 novels, including the critically acclaimed Eternity Spring series. Publishers Weekly calls March a master of delightful banter, and her heartwarming and emotionally charged stories have been named to Best of the Year list by Publishers Weekly, Library Journal, and Romance Writers of America. A graduate of Texas A&M University, Emily is an avid fan of Aggie sports, and her recipe for jalapeno relish has made her a tailgating legend. For more information about Emily and her wonderful books, you can go to her website, which is www.emilymarch.com, and I'm going to bring her live on the show. And welcome to the show, Emily.
Thank you so much.
I'm so glad to have you on. Yay, to celebrate our holidays and talk about this extra special gift you've given your readers from the Eternity Spring series.
Well, thank you so much. My readers are invested in my little town after all these books, so that's really lovely.
Yeah, I bet it's a lot of fun to, we were talking just a little bit before the show, how you can, when you write that Christmas book that's connected to your other series, and you can take a little more liberty with some fun with it, being all around, centered around a holiday. And that just, brings a little different side to your characters.
Well, I feel like when readers pick up a holiday romance, a Christmas romance, they're looking for a story that is a little different. It has that bigger message to it. Mm-hmm. And so many of my stories, because Eternity Springs is a place where broken hearts go to heal. So I always have to break hearts first. That's when I bring wounded people in, I write about wounded people. But when I sat down to do a Christmas book, I wanted it to be a little gentler story and just a little more, just something that seemed to fit the season. I didn't want to torture my characters quite as bad as I torture them ordinarily. So that was kind of a nice break for me. It was, I try to keep the depth in the stories, but at the same time, I wanted to bring that heartwarming, focus of the season. Uh-huh. So that was nice.
Yeah. The cover's beautiful, by the way. They did a really great job on that one.
I've been blessed with cover arts in all my books. So I'm thrilled. I really am. St. Martin's does a great job. When I went to St. Martin's, I think with the 10th book of the series, we wanted to just update the look a little bit but not lose what I had. With not change it completely. And I think they mm-hmm. freshened it and have done an excellent job with my look. So.
Yeah, I love them. They're beautiful. They just, the colors are so, they just contrast perfectly, to catch the eye. And this one did really great for the whole theme of Christmas with it. I like
it. Well, thank you. I'm very pleased with them.
A lot of authors don't get that much of a pull. I guess you get more say in your cover art. So it's a really, it's a good thing.
Well, it's that in a lot of cases, I've written a lot of books and some, you know, I've had some bad covers too through the years. So when you get, when the cover gods smile on you, you count your blessings. And I feel like my angel, my celeste blessing is kind of guiding the art department throughout the series. So, because I have a summer book coming up next, and it's just gorgeous. It's so welcoming and inviting, and it's called, what is it called? A Star Dance Summer is the title, and it's just, I'm just blessed with my cover art. So that's the sign of a great art department, I think.
One thing I really like about your well, I mean, this whole town comes to life. Eternity Springs just comes to life throughout this series. And I mean, you can almost just imagine walking down the streets and, you know, walking on into all these little stores and in the church and, you know, the gallery and everything else. But I love that you involve animals in all of this too. And are you a big animal lover?
I am. We, my husband and I foster for a local boxer rescue group. And we started doing that. Oh, I've lost track of how many years. And they just, my husband is a real dog person. And we just kind of got involved in it by accident. And it's such a big part of our lives that I just felt like I had to write, write that other part of the family. And
right.
Unfortunately, I have no experience with cats. I do get reader mail from time to time asking me about, you know, why are there no cats in Eternity Springs? And I'm like, I know nothing about them. I've never had them. I've never been around them. My daughter's allergic to them, so even if we wanted to have one, we couldn't. So that's why I apologize to all the cat lovers out there. But you know, they say write what you know, and I know
exactly.
So you know, but
that's what I was just saying.
So yes,
just thinking.
We're dog lovers, and we recently lost our personal dog, so we're kind of getting over the, you know, looking into getting that. Well, both of our dogs were foster failures, and so that's kind of, we're waiting for that. You kind of know when you have dogs coming through the house and you foster them and find that perfect family to adopt them. You just
you
know
when it's you.
When there's one that's meant to be your own, you know. So we're waiting to find that perfect one, that one who's meant to be with us again. So.
Well, and I mean, in talking about that, putting that into your stories, I mean, it really does. It says a lot about characters, you know, personally, about the way that they interact with their own animals or with other people's animals, say, bringing in the from the outside, so you can reveal a lot of story just by those interactions. So I love having pets and stories, because I think it, you know, I can imagine people meeting them and seeing how they interact with pets and go, oh, I like that person, because I can tell right away the dog likes them, or you know, the way that they treat their animals or things like that. So yeah, it's just like another extension.
Yeah, and it's become part of the series. I mean, it's something now I basically owe it to the readers to have a pet in every book. That's just part of the series at this point. So, and it's a lot of fun. At this point, I'm not invested in what kind of dog I have ordinarily, unless there's like in one of the stories, I needed a dog who was a really strong swimmer for plot purposes.
Oh, yeah.
But most of the time, I don't care. So I'll put it on Facebook and I'll say, okay, what kind of dog? And oh my gosh, readers, there's nothing they like better than to suggest, you know, what kind of pet, what kind of dog, what to name the dog, and naming kids. That's the only other things that, I mean, that's the most response I get ever is when I ask about, okay, what dog, kind of dog am I going to have in this book? So that's a lot
that's
of fun.
That is, you know, it's fun for readers too. You know, they book and go, oh, look, it's my name.
Yeah.
Or whatever. And that's kind of a, I don't know, they're buying in big time. So that's great. And that's fun for you because you get all the, you like you said, you get responses, you get feedback and the interest. That's fun. That's got to make what you do worth it, you know, to have that kind of input.
It's very rewarding. You know, and I feel like people really do feel like, you know, I cannot tell you how many times people say, I wish I could go to Eternity Springs. I wish, you know, I would love to visit. I would love to live there because mm-hmm. they feel like these characters are people they know or people they'd like to know, people they'd like to be friends with.
And, right.
It's very rewarding to me. In fact, one of the nicest compliments I ever had was about book 4 or 5, I guess. I got an email from someone who said she was so-and-so with the Colorado Department of Tourism, and they'd had a couple of inquiries from tourists who wanted to visit Eternity Springs.
Oh my gosh.
And she said, I think that it's a fictional place, but Colorado is a big state. And I just wanted to double check with you before to see if, you know, if this really is a place. So I thought how flattering that was that readers were going so far as to contact the Colorado Department of Tourism to try to visit this little
That's really amazing. No, it does make it a town that you want to go visit though. I mean, it's like when the whole Twilight thing came out, everybody wanted to go to Forks, Washington, you know, same type of thing.
Right.
They just wanted to go there because it was somewhere that they were identifying with for whatever reason. But, you know, as far as cute small town, perfect little small town America goes, I think that Eternity Springs fits that bill for sure. And, you know, another thing we just kind of briefly touched on before the show started was, you know, the whole it's Hallmark movies binge watching season for everyone, and that this is the type of little town that people do love to sit down and watch these as my grandma used to call them, stories about, and watch my stories. You know, and just dive in because we don't have that normal kind of life. We have crazy busy lives. I mean, you know, we're running here and there doing this and that for our family and our kids and our grandkids and whatever else you got going on, work and deadlines. And, you know, those towns are so slow and they're kicked back and easygoing. And that's the life I think everybody wants to get away to.
Well, and it's the place you'd like to live. If you know, the place that you know, it's that fantasy that maybe that place is out there where people really are kind and people, you know, the real world problems you can step away. And yet, like I mentioned, I torture my characters. I give them, you know, serious issues to deal with. But at the same point, you know, people, you know, I write about family. I write about friendship. I write about love. And, you know, they're positive messages. And my books, you know, they have a theme of healing. You know, no one is so damaged they cannot heal. And it takes, you know, I think they, in Eternity Springs, they always are able to find what they need to heal their soul. And whether that's, you know, the loved one or the friendships, or it really is, you know, a combination of all the above. And mm-hmm. I think that's why readers have identified with the series so well is because it's, you know, I'm not quite sure how I did it, but I've managed to touch a yearning, I think, inside of readers that, you know, they can escape to this place because it's a good place, you know, where good people live and you know, the good wins. So,
well, right. And speaking of escape, I mean, what really is an escape for people like me, and I know countless other listeners and readers out there, in a place like that, completely separate from your, what's going on in regular everyday life, real world problems, as we call them, and go somewhere else, at least, you know, 30 minutes a day, an hour a day, 5 hours, whatever you want to read, is thing. And it's also really, I believe that it's very therapeutic. Do you get a lot of feedback from people that they were going through hard times and this was a very healing, it helped them get through hard times?
Yeah, I do hear that. And, you know, writing is a very solitary occupation. And it's, you know, when you're under the pressure of a deadline, it's so easy to feel like you're all alone out there. You know, it's like,
right?
I have to write by myself. No one else will do this work. If I don't do it, it doesn't get done. And but then the reader mail comes in, and you know, it's just so gratifying to, you know, hear from people whose lives I've touched, and it's, I think, I think that as a reader, I read across all genres, and there's nothing I want to read more than a good bloody murder mystery, you know, a good tense thriller, but then there's sometimes I just want that escape. And I think that as the world gets uglier and uglier, it feels like that.
Right.
Yeah. It's nice to be able to count on a place where you can go and, you know, you can spend your 5 hours or whatever just with that certainty that, you know, love wins, that, you know, there is the happy ending that's out there, and
well, can be kind.
Yes, and people, exactly. So, and it's, you know, it's not something I think readers, we don't always need a book like mine as we read, but it's nice to know that there's books like, you know, the Eternity Spring series that are there when you need that gentle escape, I guess. Feel-good fiction. But that's what I tell people. I write feel-good fiction. And, you know, sometimes we just need that.
I agree. And a lot of mommies out there that don't get, you know, too much time to read anyway. When you take the time to pick up a book, you want to be sure that you're not going to get kind of ending where, you know, you want to be sure that it's going to end off and and positive note.
Yeah.
You don't throw the book in the room.
That's what attracted me to romance to begin with. You know, I believe in happily ever after. I want my happy ever after. And I'm one of those readers who, if I'm reading a book that's not in the romance genre and I'm not sure who, you know, how it's going to end, I will skip to the end and read it.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, I've been known to read books backwards just because I can't. Yeah, I'm pretty sad. What can I say? But you know, I don't like it when, you know, Game of Thrones, you kill off a character I've invested in. I have to be in the right mood. That's why I love romance, because you know there's a happy ever after.
Exactly.
And it's the journey that's the joy. It's the journey.
Well, and it's something that most people identify with in one way or another, that whole journey in the middle there. So yeah, I agree with that 100%. And, you know, there's books like you too, not as often, because I'm pretty much, I'm an addict. I have a problem with romance, but when
my
I do
favorite
step,
kind of people.
When I do step out, I don't want to be disgusted at the book. And you know, there's been books, several books, but when the sixth, and I bring it up all the time, is Gone Girl. You know, that book, I was so into that book. I was so intrigued and flipping pages constantly, and was did it wonderfully because everybody talked about it. Fortune off of it. You know, I'm still really mad at how that book ended. It didn't end well.
Right. No, I know. Well, I mean, you know, I'm one of the people who, you know, the first time I saw Gone with the Wind, you know, I rewrote the ending to myself.
Oh, yeah.
Just, you know, that's just the way I have to have.
That's not happy enough.
You know, now spell it out, you know. Don't leave us hanging.
So when did you start your writing journey? Were you always a writer, or was it something you came?
No, I was going to be an advertising executive. That's what I wanted to do. but life didn't quite turn out that way, and I ended up being a stay-at-home mom with three little kids. And when my third child was born, I decided, I'd always been a reader. And my father was the greatest storyteller I've ever known. And so I grew up listening to stories and grew up reading. And one of those days, I read a book and I just decided I wanted to try to write. And looking back on it, I think I was always searching for something that fulfilled me in a career. And I loved the creativity. That's what attracted me to advertising is I need creativity. If I had to, my sister's a CPA. If I had to do numbers, you'd just shoot me, you know, but, I didn't really expect to turn this into a career. I started doing it just for a creative outlet when I was a stay-at-home mom with three little kids. But then I've been blessed in that I ended up selling the first book I wrote, and I've been published ever since. So, and I've written different kinds of things. My career's had its ups and downs, and I was going to quit one time, and I did quit for about 9 months because I was just the business of publishing wore me down, and but I couldn't figure out anything else I wanted to do. So when I came back to it, I wrote just what I wanted to write, and I wrote without planning to sell it, without, worrying about the market. I just wrote what I wanted to write. And that was the first book of the Eternity Spring series. So and I started over, and it was a blessing to me because by walking away for 9 months, I found the joy of writing again. And that's been, I think what I'm writing now is what I always was meant to write. Mm-hmm. And I honestly don't, I feel like I've grown up a lot in my writing career, just not because I've been doing it so long now, but because I don't care so much about the, the rules, I guess, you know, what you're supposed to do and not supposed to do. I learned to just truly write from my heart again. And I love doing what I do. I was meant to move to Eternity Springs. That's just all it is. So I do get to go live in Eternity Springs every day, which is really a blessing. So.
Yeah. No, really. You're there whenever you want. How often do you spend time in your mind there when you're not writing? Do they talk to you a lot? Does it?
Well, because I'm not by nature a really fast writer. And I'm writing 2 books a year, so that keeps me always busy. And I just finished a book. I finished a book the 1st of November, immediately wrote the synopsis for the next book. Then I did revisions on that book, and, you know, then it was Thanksgiving, and then I had jury duty. today was the first day I have an office outside of the home. My husband and I have been married forever, and we downsized about 2 years ago now, and decided one of us had to get an office, and we were going to get divorced. So I have it, but I love it because it's the first time in my life I've gotten up and gone to work just like a grown up, you know. But I was into the office today and they were like, "You're here. I didn't think, you know, you haven't been here." And I was like, "Well, I had jury duty. And then today I took a grandmother day and just, I was like, all right, I have to start my new book next week for sure. So I took the day off and went and played with my 3-year-old grandson. And it was just a lovely day, and we did all the Christmas stuff, and I felt very, you know, I wrote Christmas in Eternity Springs, and, you know, when it's 100 degrees in Texas, you know, so right. It's kind of nice getting out and, you know, getting back into the whole Christmas thing today with him. So that was a lot of fun. But I'm always working, but I'm not always working, if that makes any sense whatsoever.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Next week I'll go back to the office and I will work normal work hours and try not to get too far behind over the Christmas holiday.
So you write other, outside of your Eternity Springs, you've written other contemporaries, you've written historicals. Obviously, mm-hmm. Eternity Springs is where your heart is. What was different to you? What did you find difficult or easier about writing historicals?
I grew up, I love Texas history. And so when I started writing, I fell in love with historical romance early on. And, you know, that's what I love to read. So when I started writing, it was just a natural thing to write historical romance. And because I love Texas history, I lived in Texas, that was the place, you know, that was the logical place for me to, because back then you didn't do all your research on the internet. I'd go to libraries and, you know, go to museums. And it was, you know, I loved doing all the research for the historicals. And that was a lot of fun. That, again, was escapism. It's, you know, and today I have my favorite historical authors that, you know, I just am so excited to go escape into their world. And so, you know, I did what, about 10 or 11 historicals. And then it was like, I just wanted to try something new. So I did I had an idea for one of those, you know, a women's fiction novel. So I did that. And then I bounced around I did some romantic suspense and just, you know, wrote some more historicals. And just, it took me a while to figure out what I wanted to do again. And I, you know, I'm, even now I have a thriller cooking in the back of my brain, and if I ever have time to actually write it, I will. And so it's just a creative process, I think.
Yeah. It's like I'm going to bring up an idea and that other ideas want to, those little plot bunnies pop up all over the place and drown you.
Well, it's hard in that, you know, some people are able to write on more than one project at once, and I'm just not turned that way. So I've been trying to write a short story for a while. Just, you know, I've got it all in my head, but just finding the time to write it in between projects, because I have a hard time, you know, saying, okay, on Sunday afternoons, I'm going to write on something that's not connected to my, you know, what I'm under deadline for. I have a hard time with that. So, unfortunately, I wish I could split up my time a little differently.
Well, some people aren't wired that way. I understand that. You gotta get this story out and then move on to the next project. Tell all those little ideas to go away for a while.
Yeah. Well, it's just that nasty little thing called a deadline, you know, that I try very, very, very hard to make all my deadlines. So, but that means, you know, when I take a Nana day like I did today, it backs me up on stuff. So.
You have to. I don't understand that completely.
Yeah.
What is all?
Yeah.
No play. Yeah.
That's
so,
right.
Who are you said you enjoy a good historical. What would be an example of my favorites?
Historicals.
Mm-hmm.
I love Mary Balog. I love. So you've put me on the spot. I'm sitting here going, who do I buy when the minute they come out? They're not as many as there used to be, I will tell you that. Lately, actually, I've been kind of hooked going back to the old ones, rereading my Julie Garwoods and you know, some of the old classic historical authors that just, you know, who I got started reading. And that's been a lot of fun. Laura Kinsale, reading really some older stuff. Jill Barnett. So that's kind of where my brain has been lately, is going back to the classics.
You talk about always loving history and growing up in Texas. And I this mm-hmm. is just something, for people who don't understand why Texas people love Texas so much, you know, we learn, I don't know, I see, and I don't even know if other states do this, but, you know, we learn that we learn in middle school about Texas history, then we learn again in middle school about Texas history, and, you know, mm-hmm. it's just part of our, like, this whole culture, and it's very hard not to be really into Texas history when you grow up here. It's really, even for people who weren't born here, it's very hard, because it's...
Well, and my parents were not Texans. My parents moved to Texas right before I was born, but my dad was a big history buff. So because he wasn't from Texas, he grew up taking us. You know, we went all around the state visiting, you know, the Alamo and San Jacinto and, you know, all the historical, you know, Washington on the Brazos. We went to Goliad. You know, I mean, so I grew up going to, you know, learning not just in school, but then going with my parents. And, you know, my dad was really an inspiration to me in so many ways. And I think he really encouraged my love for Texas history. And, yeah, it is a little different. And, you know, it's that independence that, you know, we grew up on. And, you know, that was fun writing about. You know, those characters, larger-than-life characters. So that was a lot of fun. Maybe I'll do a Texas historical one of these days.
I love several, not romances, but several, you know, certain things, and just love it. Just the thought of it, you know, just imagining being there. And I can remember going to the Alamo several times when I was a kid and just standing there and what we like to be standing right here in the middle of it all. You know, the whole romanticism of the whole thing is just, I mean, it calls for stories to be told. So that's
it's
beautiful.
It's a very romantic history. It really, truly is a romantic history. So, yes, it's not an. I used to get frustrated because they would call my books Westerns. And I really don't feel like Texas set novels are necessarily Westerns.
No.
And, but if you're not from here, it's hard to explain that. And I wrote, early in my career. Well, like one of my first, I think my first two or three were set in the Republic of Texas. You know, long before the old West that you think of in Western. And,
right.
So it was, you know, and I wrote, one of my books was about, you know, the French settlers who came to establish a utopia in Dallas, you know, so that's, it's just really a different history that you, again, if you didn't grow up hearing it in school, it's you know, not something most people learn about.
Yeah, but it's interesting, and people come there and they start learning. Mm-hmm. They're usually pretty fascinated. So it really is larger than.
Yes.
Halfway through, I'll put the number out if you don't mind, and see if anybody wants to.
I'm sorry, you cut out on me. I didn't understand that.
Put the number out in case anybody wants to go in and ask questions or say hi.
Ah.
It's 347-339-09 if you want to call. This is Emily. Sure, say hello, ask questions. You can go in and talk about anything as long as it's. We've had some papers. Okay, so let's talk about things, traditions, your holiday romance. I have a Christmas story.
I'm not hearing you right now. It's cutting out really bad.
Second.
Hello? Can you hear me?
Can you hear me now?
Now, there I
can
heard you.
Now you can hear me? Okay. I think my internet.
Yeah.
Back up. That was really interesting. Okay. So sorry about that. Issues again. We're talking about stories in the holidays. And when you think of a holiday story, what would be the first story to come to mind to you as far as holiday stories?
Oh, you mean
romance?
It
doesn't have to be romance. Anything.
Well, gosh, you know, Scrooge and, you know, I guess I'm thinking Scrooge today because I did it with my grandson. With that, there is a, you know, the gift of the Magi to me is always one of those stories that tears my heart. I loved the Home Alone and
yes.
Christmas Vacation. My gosh, you know, it's Christmas Vacation is just like so hard to be beat. And but at the same time, it's all those classic Christmas movies like, and what's the Jimmy Stewart movie?
It's a Wonderful Life.
It's a Wonderful Life. Yeah. So, I think so many of the Christmas books that are on the market take those, you know, those classic Christmas tales and retell them. And that's always fun to see how an author can take a story you've heard a million times before and put their own twist on it and bring
right.
out, you know, give you a new story. It's always fun.
Yes, those. Well, and, you know, just an overall kind of story arc, you know, you've got your different conflicts and, you know, we call them in the romance world, they call them tropes, but, you know, you've mm-hmm. got your basic tropes that go across universally, pretty much all the time. So in one way or another, you might catch one of the tropes. I mean, I don't, pretty much all been covered, pretty much.
Yeah.
But you put your own twist and your own spin. I love the retellings. And I love the retellings of the fables, too. I think they're wonderful. People put a new spin on. Yeah. I like a lot of, I noticed several of them. I go back to my watching work. Several of those movies were the kind of the It's a Wonderful Life-ish type of thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
She was never married and then, you know, gets her wish and her husband has who she is and, you know, the whole thing all over. There's several of those. Christmas Bucket List one was cute. And,
yeah.
You know, the fake engagements are cute. In the holidays just makes it like ups the romance exponentially.
Well, I think that, you know, again, it's that feel good time of year and it's a time for heartwarming stories, a time for, you know, hopeful stories. And it's just, I have a lot of my readers. You know, my book, Christmas in Eternity Springs, came out October 4th, so it's been out a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked my readers on in my newsletter, I think, after Thanksgiving. It's like, okay, how many people saved the book to read after the official start of the holiday season? And a surprising number of people said they kept it. They keep and they read Christmas stories every year.
Yeah.
But it's something they look forward to during the holidays. And I got thinking about, well, you know, I do the same thing. But then I have a lot of people will read year round. I have a little a novella called A Callahan Carol that I have a trilogy that is like a prequel to my Eternity Spring series. And a mm-hmm. lot of people aren't aware of those. And I wrote a little novella, a Christmas novella, to tie the two series together. And I've been surprised at how people read that thing all year long. So it's, I think readers have just, you know, some people will only read during Christmas stories during the holidays, but other people, no, they'll read them all year long.
Yeah, no, I do the same thing. You put it in the year too. You know, you gave us and you get that feeling, and it's that time of year, and you pick up the book,
mm-hmm.
you know, the stories, and watch the movies, and do the family traditions because it all brings those feel good, you know,
right.
moments. Yeah, I agree with that 100%. I do that too, and I did save your book for this holiday season because. You know, it's my gift to myself. I get to celebrate Christmas
Aww.
By myself.
So. Thank you.
So I saved it too. But yeah, and then last year you had the other one, the Heart Song Cottage came out around Christmas.
Yeah.
Well, it was your Christmas novel. Came out about the same time. But yes, yeah, same thing. You know, it's like, Mom, look, we got a book for Christmas. Yay, we're all celebrating. So. Because we always share our books, so. But yeah,
that's lovely.
And it is. It's wonderful. That's what Christmas I think is mm-hmm. about. You know, and it's a time where people, they kind of think about the things that have gone on either with their family and stuff, and make amends and all of those things too. So, yeah, I agree. What are some of your family traditions that you, I mean, you don't have to share if you don't want to, but what are some things that, you know, just when you think of hanging out with a family for Christmas, what do you know is going to get done? What are the things you do?
One of our most treasured traditions is the very first year that I cooked a holiday dinner, you know, for my own family, and instead of my mom cooking it, you know, I cooked it. It was mm-hmm. the first year to cook. And I bought a tablecloth, and I don't know if I saw this in a magazine or something, but I bought a tablecloth, and I bought paint pens, and I asked everyone who was at our Christmas dinner to sign the tablecloth. And that tablecloth is now like 30 years old.
Oh!
We've got signatures. All my kids sign it every year. So I pull it out. I quit using it. I used it for a long time, and then I put it away because it was starting to fade some. But I still put it on the table on Christmas Eve, and everybody still, by gosh, has to sign it, or mom won't, you know, mom gets after them. So, but that's really my kids love it. It's truly a family treasure at this point. And it's so fun to look back every year and, you know, and now we, you know, like my parents are gone, people who, you know, have left our lives, and it's, mm-hmm. it's really a nice memory pull it out every year and remember the different, because everyone, you know, when they sign it, you know, it's like, you know, suffering through Aggie football some years, you know, or it's the year the kid, you know, one of the kids had a car accident, or, you know, they all had, you know, some of the sayings are pretty clever, but that's been a treasure. And when my children married, I gave everyone their, as a Christmas gift, I gave them a tablecloth and a set of pens. So now they're starting their own tablecloth. So that's
like something out of one of your
probably,
books.
I need to put that in a book, come to think of it. But so that's probably one of the traditions that means most to me. I find that as, you know, my family is growing now with, you know, my children marrying and having children of their own. So, you know, things change a little bit, and we're starting new traditions, and mm-hmm. that's a fun thing. But for many years, we would have my little nuclear family would have Christmas Eve, and then Christmas Day was for the extended family.
Mm-hmm.
And that I still, you know, I think everybody still enjoys that, but it's harder to do as people grow up and families get bigger. And
yes, it is.
You know, you try to balance all that. But as far as other traditions, you know, it's just going and looking at Christmas lights. You know, putting in the James Taylor Christmas CD. You know, it started out being the cassette tape, you know. Now,
right.
You know, but and looking at Christmas lights with my daughter will still come over and, you know, to go look at Christmas lights with her daddy. So things like that. I think the traditions are, if you set out to make something a tradition, sometimes it backfires on you. It's the little things you just kind of stumble into that end mm-hmm. up having a lot of meaning.
Right. That's so true. You know, ours, but really it was mom baked. My mom bakes like crazy. Just tons and tons of different kinds of cookies, candies, and everything. You know, the only thing that really is the same constantly after we open presents, it becomes this huge smorgasbord of cookies and candy, and we just and all gorge ourselves silly. So we can't anymore. And we're all, you know, diabetic coma shock or whatever. But,
yeah.
But no matter what, where we've been, it's always been there's always been that conflict. My dad passed away last year, and even had a smorgasbord. So something's just always there. My sister's baking to make up for baking
well,
as much
as
my baking. So.
Somebody has to, you know, that's important. It's the things that go from generation to generation are, you know, those are lovely, lovely things to, as a family, to try to maintain if it's possible.
Absolutely. You know, and it's part of who you are, and you just pass it on. That is, you know, I mean, that's what love's about, families and so happy endings.
There you go. There you go.
So before we go, do you have a summer coming out? Do you have a date publication?
The next book comes out, I think it's June 24th or 5th, somewhere in there, at the end of June. It's a July book. Called A Star Dance Summer. And I think it's maybe the funniest book I've written in a long time. It's a, I got the idea for this book because my husband and I live part-time in the city and part-time out at our lake house. And so we're on a co-op power electrical thing at the lake.
Yeah.
And we get a magazine. And there was an article in a magazine about this camping club. It's an all-women glamping club, which is glamour camp, glamorous camping.
Uh-huh.
And it's all women. And so they showed in this article I read, had pictures of their trailers, which were just decorated to the nines. And it just seemed like a lot of fun. So I contacted the camping lady and I asked her if I could visit because I had an idea for a book. Well, long story short, I'm now a member of the camping club. And they're just so much fun, but it's all female, and they go camping once a month. And so that was the genesis, the idea for the book, that the kind of grew out from there. And it's about a camping club that goes to Eternity Springs and spends the summer. And it was a lot of fun to write. And I think, this is a book that, well, I didn't, you know, again, I didn't torture the characters too much in this one. And the kind of message was, well, everybody just, you know, we all have problems. But we don't always have to have dead babies and, pirates attacking us and some of the things I've done in some of the other books, you know, that sometimes it's just everyday problems that can give you a good story. So it's I'm excited about it. And so it's the characters are Britt Callahan, who you meet in Christmas in Eternity Springs, and then a new female who I introduce in A Star Dance Summer.
Okay. Is that all you have on tap for 2017?
Then I have, because the next book won't come out till it's February of 2018.
Yes.
So, and then I'll have another Christmas book, and so I'll have two books in 2018, but only one in 2017. So I
you'll be in edit
and maybe
world.
Who knows, maybe I'll get that thriller written in the middle of there, but I probably not.
Well, go read some thrillers for inspiration. You'll get back in that mindset.
There you go.
Well, let's see, you have a wonderful website, newsletter available.
Yes.
A street.
Hello, I've lost again.
I don't know. Can you hear me now?
Okay. Now, yeah, okay. I can hear that.
Now you can hear me. Okay. You have a also have a reader group that.
I do on Goodreads. We started that when I moved to St. Martin's, and they suggested we do a reread of the whole series. And so we started that, and there's a group of, I think the group has like 250 people, but maybe there's a group of like 20 women who have formed their own little sisterhood and have become dear friends. So that's been really nice to see. So yes, it's on Emily March. I think it's just like Emily March fans and the groups and Goodreads.
Okay.
People can find it. So I know we love to welcome new people. I just jump in from time to time there, but they kept the group up, and they really do support themselves, support each other. We've really bonded. So that's been nice to see. It's that friendship thing,
yes.
Just like I write about. So
yeah,
that's been nice.
Books do that. Books do that to people.
Mm-hmm.
So. Let's see. You also you have an Amazon author page. You have a Facebook author page. Pinterest account.
I've lost you again.
Can you hear me? Hello?
No, in and out.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, well, yep. It's locking up on me. Can you hear me now, Emily?
I can you just cut out in and out. So,
the internet's being wonky. Well, let's tell everybody, they can find all your social media contacts on your website, which is emilymarsh.com.
Yes.
And then upcoming releases with your newsletter.
Yes, please do.
Wonderful.
Please join my newsletter. I that's the best way to keep up to date on everything. And I don't send out too many of them, so I don't bombard people.
See, now you're...
it's really gotten bad.
Can you hear me?
Now
me
I
now?
Hear you.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know what's up with me. I just saw it. That's crazy. Never does that. Okay, well, I will end the struggle. But thank you so much for being on the show and talking to me about.
Well, I enjoyed it. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to your listeners. And I wish you a Merry Christmas.
You too. Have a wonderful holiday. Enjoy this lovely
thank you so
next
much.
Winter.
I will. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Good evening.
All right. Good night.
Bye-bye. And thanks for listening in tonight. You can find me on Facebook at Library, also on Twitter as @_library_. This podcast has been recorded and will be available as a podcast for Authors on the Air website, Tunes, and you can find Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. com, and we're on Twitter and everywhere else you can think of. Good night to all. Thanks for joining me for the holiday show, and I will see you again Thursday and Easter here on the live. And signing off, sweet and happy holidays.